I wanted to ask you how about your career path, how you got started doing this kind of work, working with Holocaust as a subject matter.
Well, there's a psychological answer to that and a logical answer to that. And if you want to do some reading, I've written that part of my autobiographical book. I grew up after the war and was educated in New York Yeshivot by Hebrew-speaking teachers who were, for the most part, Holocaust survivors, but we didn't use the term. They were refugees. We saw things that were never mentioned. And a teacher with the fist but no fingers held chalk like this. I had another teacher who never moved his left arm. In fact, that was the same teacher. And I had a teacher who had tattooed numbers on his arm. We didn't know what they were. We'd heard words like children and death and murder, and we were being taught that we had to make up. We were privileged because we were a small elite in those days, a small group was being educated like this. We had to make up for the entire culture that was lost. But we didn't have the words, we didn't have the notion. I also grew up in a very interesting synagogue, which was composed of German and Belgian Jewish refugees who escaped in 1938, 39, 40, and were desperately trying to reconstitute in America the world they had left behind in Frankfurt or Antwerp. The language in my synagogue was German, meaning that instead of most synagogues of that age where the language the people spoke was Yiddish, this was an immigrant generation that spoke German. The culture was German, the pronunciation was German, though deeply Orthodox. And therefore, they too were a shattered culture. When I was in school, we didn't study the Holocaust, but once we were first coming out, and I remember listening to the Eichmann trial, I even attended a day of the Eichmann trial and saw it on closed-circuit television in those days in Israel.
How old were you when the Eichmann trial took place?
14, 15. Maybe 16, I mean, you know, somewhere. Somewhere in that age, I'd have to, you know, look up the dates exactly. But I used to get up every morning. They just developed, they just developed the clock radio at that point. And I got up every morning listening to Warren Nagransky reporting from Jerusalem on the Eichmann trial. Because when I had to get up in the morning, that was, you know, I think it was a 6:25 report every morning. And I woke up not to music, but to the news channel. The news station. So then I was working in a very interesting question in the history of religion, which is what happens. Why are some cultures destroyed after defeat and other cultures are not? When the guy came up to me and said, you're not asking an ancient question, you're asking a contemporary question. So I said, look, I'm interested in ancient religion. What are you talking about contemporary stuff? He said, start reading this literature. And essentially, I found that Holocaust literature resonated with me because it was asking in the most contemporary fashions the questions that I was asking. And then
Is this when you were studying for your PhD?
This was at the beginning of my PhD studies.
Okay.
So what I did then was to study with a fellow named Richard Rubenstein, who had written a book called After Auschwitz. And who was asking all the God questions, and who essentially said a very simple proposition that turned out to be both historically correct and set Rubenstein's questions set the theological agenda of the contemporary Jewish world. Essentially said, no theology will be relevant if it doesn't deal with the twin revolutions in modern Jewish history, of contemporary Jewish history, which is the Holocaust and the rise of the State of Israel. And consequently, what happened at that point is that I figured this was the guy I wanted to study. Not because I agreed with his answers, but because I agreed with his questions.